Welcome to the Mike and Doug Show, where globalists go to die and where conspiracy theories are found to be true or false. And today we are going to discuss Michael Pompous Pompeo, who I have never liked from the moment that Trump chose him. And before that, he didn't really exist, except that he would always show up at the right place at the right time, which makes me suspect that he is a globalist, imperialist, cardboard cutout who shows us the exact path that the Pilgrim Society prepares in their grooming for the people that they would like to put into the White House and into the top positions in America to sell out America. The same old story the Brits have been doing from the beginning. So the researchers from Americans for Innovation, Michael McKibben and his miners, have discovered things about the path, particularly, it was interesting to me, which includes everyone and all of the guilty parties and all the usual suspects. And Michael Pompeo is a perfect example of that. So we're going to discuss that today in the show. Hi, Mike.
Hello, Douglas. How are you?
I am in a dandy mood. I don't know. I'm celebrating for some reason, probably because I've already, I already had my Trump victory party the other night because, you know, we already know who's going to win. So, you know, I'm in a really good mood. But how about yourself?
I'm in a great mood. It's a little rainy here.
Is it?
We're getting the aftermath of the hurricane.
Well, I know when it rains, it seeps down into your caves and makes a real mess down there. So I apologize for that.
Right.
Yeah, yes.
We miss having you down there with us.
Well, you know, the air got too thin for me. I'm like the, you know, I've seen how many canaries have met their demise down in those mines. So,
well, you said you had an opinion about Mike Pompeo. I had no opinion at all. But what the researchers were bringing me was compelling. And so what we've been doing for the last 2 or 3 weeks is just really digging into that and verifying all the information and the documents, and especially the timeline of his career juxtaposed with other things we know about what the Pilgrim Society is doing. And it became clear over the course of 2 or 3 weeks that what we're looking at is almost a classic case of Pilgrim Society grooming. And that, I guess I'm not surprised, but I had always heard that he was from Kansas City, that he was an evangelical, that he was a Sunday school teacher. And, you know, that's the PR. And I believed it because I hadn't really dug into it. But as we moved along, and without being judgmental, we found that his words, his faith words, did not square up with his actions. And when I rediscovered that video of him talking about how the CIA lies, cheats, and steals, and that he did the same, that doesn't square at all with the idea that he is a good, committed evangelical. So a lot of anomalies started appearing that showed that there was an official narrative that was public relations. And then when we actually looked at the many biographies of him that are floating out there in the ether, we started seeing that there was a very strong attempt to mask the number of associations that that he has and had with the players that we know now are Pilgrim Society leaders, including the commencement speaker at his graduation in 1986 from West Point was Caspar Weinberger, the defense secretary, who resigned the next year and immediately was made an officer of the Pilgrim Society in the United States. So that pretty much tells you that there was a passing the baton that was occurring with that relationship and a number of others.
I like to call him Pilgrim's Progress, or it's actually Pilgrim's Regress with these people, that they take people who are nothings and they turn them into people who are so magical that wherever they go, they innovate and they create and they make the place just filthy rich with their ingenuity for a year or two or four, and then they go on and they do it everywhere they go, and they never have a single failure. Not one single failure can you find in Michael Pompeo's beautiful biography that was put together by the miners. But, you know, you gave, like, this is a double bonus pack. You know, this is like opening a box of Cracker Jacks and finding two prizes. You mentioned Jonathan, Sir John, one of my favorite, absolutely one of my favorite, two of my favorites, actually, who are obviously friends of Michael Pompeo, which demonstrate he goes right back to the Privy Council, right back to British intelligence, and right back to two of the biggest, most corrupt companies that I can even think of. And who am I speaking of? Sir Jonathan Richard Symonds, who is kinetic, Q, which begins with a Q and ends with a Q. For all you QAnons out there, there's someone I know who was locked up right after he mentioned that the real Q was kinetic and that it was the British agency that basically took over many of the contracts that Serco had because they were so inept. And then there's Elizabeth Manningham Buller. Well, she was called M when she was the head of British intelligence, and she went to wear Purbright and Muriel. But when you list the places that those two are on, and then you compare them to the places that Michael Pompeo were on, you basically see an American and a British version of the same Pilgrim's Progress path.
Well, you said it earlier, but let me emphasize where I think that they jumped the shark with Mike Pompeo's resume was that we clearly see the pattern of grooming, and he had just completed a decade-long stint in various law firms in the 90s. And then magically in 1997, which just happens to be the year that Boeing gobbled up McDonnell Douglas, and a lot of other things were happening related to a new strike fighter that Lockheed was building. Mike and two other of his West Point fellow graduates magically in Kansas City started an aerospace company called Thayer Aerospace and immediately started getting contracts from Boeing, from Lockheed, Raytheon, and those contracts were all associated with British Aerospace and BAE. And he started getting hundreds of millions of dollars worth of contracts and massive amounts of financing from the Koch brothers, from, as it turns out, some new documents were uncovered that shows that J.P. Morgan had a 15% warrant stake in the financing of these companies, which were then sold as soon as Mike moved on to politics. And that meant that J.P. Morgan made out like a bandit for not putting up any of their own money. They got it in warrants. Plus, they no doubt got their loans paid back and with interest. So this is the game they play. And what they clearly did is they decided Mike needed some aerospace experience. And they also set him up in an oil company as well. But in the aerospace business, he was given contracts that when we look back at the history of British Aerospace and Lockheed, we see that there was a point in 1999 when BAE, let me get this right, Lockheed purchased a portion of BAE. And so they then exchanged stock. And what we can see happened is they started buying each other's subsidiaries. And so the relationship was so intertwined or interlocked that there is no difference. And what we have to realize is that Lockheed and Kinetic and Serco and these British Aerospace are all controlled by the Queen's Golden Chair. So that meant that all of the defense contracts that these companies were engaged in, where they were interlocked with British Aerospace, meant that the Queen was effectively running these companies and controlling these companies. I don't mean her directly, but her Privy Council.
And what a shock and a surprise it was to me when I was studying the military industrial complex to find out that Lockheed was basically controlled by the Brits. And then when I met you and your researchers brought out the fact that the Golden Share is owned by the Queen, then really Lockheed Martin is a foreign agent that gets, basically they just throw these contracts back and forth to one another.
Right.
And in that very fantastic way you described in the article, the way that they sell each other divisions, and that the when they bid, one bids fantastically high, the other one bids fantastically low. But then the low, those bids, when they get the contracts, they go into overruns, which end up being more than the high bid. And so when you look for the trillions of dollars that came up missing that no one can track from the Pentagon, you want to look into aerospace. The F-35 which is the
contract that Pompeo got from Lockheed,
which is the worst contract for aeroplanes ever in American history. We ordered huge amounts of them, but at any one time, only a few of them worked, and they all had to cannibalize all the planes so they could get a few to work. And so then what happened to all those planes that didn't work? Oh, they were all in a hangar in Florida when one of the biggest hurricanes that had seven eyes in the middle of it, that was looked as if it was aimed directly at that Air Force base, completely, supposedly, ate up all the F-35s. And so, sorry, trillions of dollars lost. Incorrect.
Well,
they were never completed.
It's understandable. Here we have an attorney, Mike Pompeo, is given contracts to build key parts for that particular fighter. Now, when's the last time you ever met an attorney who was an aerospace engineer? Now, he did study engineering in college. I'll give him that at West Point. But besides that, he never worked in engineering. So here we have an inexperienced engineer at best, suddenly running a company that's building parts for a jet aircraft fighter. And we expect that to come out well. That will never come out well.
Yeah, and basically you pointed out in this article and your researchers and the staff writers over at Americans for Innovation that Thayer, the company that good old Michael Pompeo was running, magically just all of a sudden gets a huge contract for deep space surveillance, which I don't even want to look into what deep space surveillance is because I know full well what it is. It's the same thing that Elizabeth Manningham Buller did, intelligence. In other words, intelligence manipulation, surveillance, targeting, control, so on and so forth. Same thing that Kinetic does. And we sell out American contracts to Kinetic all the time, and to Serco, and to British Crown agents.
Point out that the deep space surveillance was a document that I sent you while I was sending you, and our people were sending you all those other documents. But that specific contract was let between Serco and the U.S. Space Force in Diego Garcia in the British Indian Ocean. And so that Serco, a British company, British Crown-controlled company, running our deep space surveillance. So when you get into deep space, you basically put eyes on the whole planet. Ears, I should say.
And as I say, you have pointed out that little Mikey Pompeo has a boyfriend, and his name is Sir Richard Simons, the head of Kinetic. And if you look, you have put their brilliant, incredibly unhindered, amazing biographies underneath their pictures that show that they are the head of everything too, though they don't have any experience or training in it. And they go from one basically depopulation element of the imperialistic, globalistic control of the world to the next, whether it be pharmaceutical, whether it be propaganda, whether it be legal, whether it be arms and weapons, whether it be deep space surveillance. And Serco had all those military contracts, and they lost a lot of them in Britain because they would only deliver on 65%.
Why would we ever give a contract for deep space surveillance to a British company? I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous, but it is total proof of this conspiracy to take down the United States by giving all these control contracts to Britain.
And half of our aerospace contracts go to companies that are controlled, especially with the Golden Share through Lockheed Martin. Those are the biggest military-industrial corporations, and they're international. They take our money, and they don't deliver on what it is they say they're going to deliver, and it's a huge scam.
Douglas, in 2008, Kinetic announced in their public financial statements and their annual report that they had the contract to write the software that would manage all of the assets of the U.S. Army worldwide, which would include all their aircraft. We are giving away every aspect of our military capability to the British Pilgrim Society. It's so obvious.
Yes, and it's amazing that Thayer, this aerospace company that little Mikey Pompous controlled, all of a sudden just jumped into the game and got these fantastic contracts that one basically makes them a monopoly for a while. And then all of a sudden, when he gets out of it, it kind of disappears. Well, you know, this kind of stuff, you know what stinks of? It stinks of the rotten stench of the Highlands Forum Group, because there's no way these things could have been given to this, as I said before, imperialistic, globalistic, cardboard cutout Mikey Pompeo, unless it was set up by the Highlands Forum, which is an international group that sells out every one of the American and British patents into weaponization. And so we get to see that he gets these contracts for things he has nothing to do with. And when you look into any of them, they're all suspect. Well, look into Lockheed Martin. It was funny when we did our exposés on them, again, with the help of the miners, we showed that Lockheed Martin had at one time the largest intelligence agency in the world, L3. Well, isn't that amazing? So the largest number of larger than the NSA, let's put it that way, larger than the NSA was Lockheed Martin's L3, and it had more people with top secret security clearances and intelligence than the NSA, all branches of the NSA, because there's a branch in every military component. So what do we see here? We see that the Highlands Forum, which is in Qtel, and you pointed out, I like the way that you now say, not only CIA in Qtel, but Pilgrim. Don't you add the word pilgrims to it?
Yeah.
Because that's exactly what it is. And so really, when it comes back to it, I was harping years ago on the Highlands Forum, but I didn't understand that when I would say this transnational, multinational, international group that has sold out America and is anti-American and weaponizes everything from stolen patents in America and the UK also, they are all driven by the Pilgrim Society.
Yep. Well, that's been their strategy from their formation days in 1902, and it really started before that. When we saw in 1895 timeframe, we saw the British Parliament being led by Lord Rosebery, who was an inheritor of the N.M. Rothschild fortune, along with Henry de Worms, who was a sponsor of Henry Wellcome, which is the vaccines. It's now GlaxoSmithKline. And then we see them tied up with Lord Rothschild, and then also Cecil Rhodes, who was made a member of the Pilgrim Society in 1895. And so we see this maelstrom of individuals. And the new one that we've talked about recently that we need to add to this mix is W.T. Stead, because it's turning out that this journalist was a committed occultist. And so that added a new element to this. So it wasn't just about money. It was about the occult and their objectives for a new kind of world that was driven by their bankers, their corporate people, and their occultists. And as we now can see that 100 years later, these occultists have gotten pretty effective at what they do. And the current society that we live in has been heavily affected and even formed, you might say, by this occult demonic aspect to these power mongers. And we are now in the throes of them being discovered, named and discovered, which is new to this story that started in 1890. We didn't know because they used the secrecy of these governments and the power, the money power of the banks to keep knowledge of their existence off of the radar screen of everybody. Then they invented that magical word, conspiracy theory, that threw everybody off. And as it's turning out, we look back at a lot of those people that were labeled conspiracy theorists and recognize they were identifying pieces and parts of this story. But it's taken recent history to be able to get access. I mean, we didn't even know, by the way, about the Five Eyes Agreement until 2010, when the British Archive and the NSA simultaneously released evidence of that document. So that's how recently we've learned that these people have been at this a long time.
And when Five Eyes was created, that was the beginning of the end, because it was Anglo-Americanism, not by the people, we the people in America, or by anybody that is slightly free in the British Kingdom, the United Kingdom. But what happened was we created Five Eyes at the same time. And guess what? Four of those eyes are British. We only get one eye, but they get four.
By the way, in this research, one of our folks correlated another factoid that agreement was signed on March 5th of 1946. Well, Winston Churchill was on a junket in the United States, and from the back of a train with Truman at his side, he actually announced that America and Britain had a new special relationship. And that was the first time, I believe, that he ever used the word Iron Curtain. So we can see from their documents that they were teeing up anti-communism as their next bogeyman after they had completely wiped out Germany and the Axis countries. And now they were going to pivot all of their excuse for their development of a military complex to attacking the Soviets. And it was on that same day that Five Eyes was created. So clearly Churchill was in on this, as was Truman.
And instead of making us the 55th nation in the Commonwealth of the United Kingdom, we got a completely different title. We got Special Relationship.
Right.
Special relationship means the British control us. And you mentioned W.T. Stead. What's really important in my mind is to remember that politicians lie and they create evil specters that don't go away, because those lies live on in the minds of those who believed it. But worse than that is when they put it into law. And when they put it into law, then literally demons are evoked that don't go away until those laws are changed. For instance, the current pandemic laws in America. But W.T. Stead, who was a really sick, crazy person, basically you could call it occult psychism, what did they do? They were into grooming. Yes. And that's what we have now. You know that exactly. It makes me sick to my stomach to realize that in Britain, whole gangs are arrested for grooming girls that they're raping, and no one gets charged because grooming is considered okay. That's the sick type of pedophilia we're dealing with when we're talking about the worst end of the British monarchy and aristocracy system that has led us to then have W.T. Stead come to America, and Larry Ellison is walking in the same footsteps. And so the revelation you gave with your recent research on Larry Ellison was absolutely astounding, to find it goes back to Cecil Rhodes' roundtable and his sick, perverted secretary, who was basically their minister of propaganda, who traveled all over the world grooming people for the Pilgrim Society, grooming them for the Pilgrim's regress, not progress. Or as I once saw Betsy Ross put a nice meme out that said, the Dead Pilgrim Society instead of the Dead Poet Society. Right. I like that, because we need to put an end to them. And here's what I say, real simple, got a cure for this. Simple, simple cure. You get knighted by the Queen, you can't be an American. You can't have dual citizenship, and you certainly can't be a politician or in any way represent Americans if you are a dual citizen. Well, that's how Russian oligarchs and these go to Britain, and then the Britons come to America, and then they go back and forth of, well, we can't prosecute them. They're not Americans. No. Either you're with us or you're against us.
Casper Weinberger, keynote speaker at Pompeo's graduation, where he was, they said he was the number one student. 2 years later, he is knighted by the Queen of England with a GBE and carried that to his death. And I can't remember, about 2007, 2008. Weinberger was a major player. Our defense secretary was a major player in the Pilgrim Society, and certainly overlapped with Kissinger, who was a vice president of the Pilgrims at the 2008 bank bailout. So if people are hesitant to name this enemy, then do some more studying, because the facts are clear now. The Pilgrim Society is the group that we call the deep state, and they have avoided having their name mentioned because of all the secrecy and the controls over our information and our libraries and our education that kept them out of the limelight. And as we know, that this document that they created in 1909, when they created the Empire Press Union, shows that it's the players that we've been talking about. W.T. Stead played a major part in that, as did all of Milner and all those people that were associated with Rhodes and the Rhodes Roundtable. You see, these people are, they have created some sort of spiritual power that they have passed from generation to generation. And it's not goodness. We're seeing nothing but death and destruction and manipulation and oppression and war and conflict, because they learned they could make money doing that. But in addition, every time they created a new war, they consolidated power. And this was part of their plan, their 24-step plan that Lillian Troy identified in 1912. And that plan specifically talked the strategy for taking the United States back. And they are still, that plan is still in play. That's up on several websites now. But that was preserved in the Congressional Record in 1940 by Representative Thorkelson from Montana. And thank God he did that, because everywhere else that 24-step plan has vanished from the official records and the newspapers that it was published in. She left us a time capsule, and thank God for her.
And then we got to see, coming right out of the British Queen's Privy Council, people like Lord Malik Brown, or people like Jeffrey Paddy, who are the archetypal example of what happens when you do not have the type of, well, basically you have immunity that because you work for the Queen. And when there's a monarchy, we don't expect you to have freedoms. But here in America, I'm sorry, but I don't want Michael Pompeo to have a title given by the Brits. I don't want him to have associations through his companies that are directly aligned to these evil people, you know, Richard Simons and Elizabeth Manningham Buller. I mean, these are very evil people. And when you look at Kinetic, just take a look at what they do. And the name begins with a Q, ends with a Q. So, you know, if you want to know who Q is, this is the perfect example of propaganda manipulation that nobody knows who it is, and yet it can affect huge amounts of people, and no one can ever get to the bottom of it. You cannot tell me that that is true. The FBI investigated QAnon, right? And they can't tell you who they are? No, what's going on is when they investigated, they found out at that moment probably Kinetic had taken it over, because the British know from the beginning that it's intelligence that controls their war machine. It controls their pharmaceutical machine. It controls their big agricultural machine. It controls everything. Wherever the money is, it's intelligence that drives it. And they are always ahead of the game. That's the reason that they were, in my opinion, directly connected with the release of COVID-19 in Wuhan through three different methods, and in direct alignment with Perbright and with a Muriel Animal, whatever it's called.
The Health Institute.
I can never get that one. So these people are literally now attacking us in a World War III. This is World War III, a pharmaceutical attack upon the world that is being more effective because it has instilled more fear than perhaps World War I and II together. Every person in the world now is told that every other person in the world could be their imminent death, when there is no proof that even the Spanish flu was passed through contagion, and that a lot of the people who wore masks during the Spanish flu died of bacterial pneumonia, which is exactly what people are dying of now that they accredit to coronavirus 19. Also, look at the flu deaths. The British Perbright Institute, this has already been shown through the great research of Michael McKibben and the Miners. Sounds like a group. I think you guys should go on the road, because the tune that you're playing shows people the reality of just how far back this plan goes, as you were just mentioning. This point by point, if you look at it, the plan is the same plan as the globalists, the New World Order, and the United Nations, and all the different agencies that work out of the United Nations, with only one intent, and that is to destroy America, the bastion of freedom, because the United Nations is about sinking to the lowest common denominator. Basically, it's globalist communism and British imperialistic driven globalist communism, exactly as the League of Nations was supposed to be their new tool to simply sanction who's on what side before the next war. And now we see that war has been taken into every home in the world through the World Health Organization's declaring a pandemic when there was no pandemic. It was another release of a P4 Labs synthetic experimentation on creating viruses that combine every vile virus that they had was put into this recent one. And so when they analyze this, which has been done by many groups, what do they find? You name it. Everything is in that virus. Problem is, it isn't really very contagious. So they've been giving out money to claim that people who died of influenza or pneumonia or premorbidities are coronavirus. Well, who can do propaganda like that? That would be Lord Malik Brown. That would be Jeffrey Patty. That would be the Privy Council. They've been doing it all the way back to these roots of the Empire Press Conference, which was an overt attempt to take over all media and control it with an intelligence agency that was beyond governmental control. And that's what's still going on.
Exactly. Well, I mean, think of the brilliance of this. They have weaponized healthy people. They've made healthy people the enemy, because we might be carrying around, theoretically, something that we don't even know we have and probably don't have. But the propaganda has been successful so that we've all been brought into this orbit. And that's clearly propaganda. But the other aspect of this resurgence, Douglas, we have to remember this carbon nanotube guy out of Harvard had developed mechanisms for using nanotubes to contain viruses. And so, you know, it's magical the way we see all these flare-ups occurring in democratic areas. And after a while, you can't say that's a coincidence. So I think that the additional element here is that by aerosol or by overhead spray or even injecting these molecules in food, they are able to create a spike by just contaminating people in a certain area. And I think that's what's going on. And so they can do that forever. So that story can, you know, Fauci's really convinced that this lockdown is going to keep on and keep, he said through 2021 now, and I'm sure that will keep going up. Every time he gives an estimate, it's more time. And I think that's because they know they can spray this fairy dust carbon nanotubes wherever they want, anytime they want, and create a false crisis.
And the research that we have brought forth, both Aim for Truth as well as Americans for Innovation, point out that in fact it was done on purpose. It was create these patents were created, and you can't put a patent on a normal coronavirus because it happens in nature. So how could you patent something that wasn't man-made? That in itself proves that they've been doing this since when? Since the time of Burroughs' Wellcome drug company, which convinced us that by taking a pill, they took the idea of Beecham, that you take a pill and you can solve the problem. It's kind of like the magic tonic, but not in a bottle. It's in a pill. And they started spreading these viruses to see what would happen. They started experimentation with this, and it has gone on to this very day.
And oh, by the way, they called that brand Tabloid. And isn't it interesting that W.T. Stead is called the father of tabloid journalism? He and Wellcome were contemporaries. I don't think that was a mistake.
Oh, no. No, the British are, this is protracted. It is well laid out. It is premeditated. And we see it because Cecil Rhodes wrote about it, basically saying that the white race should rule the world, a certain form of white supremacy that then, and anyone who speaks English can rule the world. Oh, since now we can have the sun never sets on the United Kingdom, the British Empire, now we're just going to say just white men, and then now we're going to say white men who are rich, and then white men who are rich with sexual perversions, who then become occult psychism and basically grooming for the kind of Rhodes Scholar award you get. You're only going to become a Rhodes Scholar if somebody says, hey, you know, you seem like you could handle the vile thoughts of Cecil Rhodes and not actually call them what they are: depopulation, murder, world wars. So I suggest that there is a solution to this. It's very simple. William Casey, Tenet, and other CIA heads went over to the British company, Kinetic, and then got these fantastic contracts. Well, this is the musical chairs of people rotating in and out of high intelligence positions for low amounts of money, and then going to work for a company that is non-American, who they should have to register with the foreign agents registry, because they're actually acting in the part of the Privy Council for their own insatiable greed. So we need to do is remember that these people, in almost all cases, were senior executive service members. We need to pass a law, like Trump had this suggestion that anyone who'd been a politician can't be a lobbyist afterwards. Well, how about if we say anybody who was an SES member cannot play the game of moving through intelligence groups, banks, holding companies, foundations, because they're taking privileged information and selling it. So we have to stop the musical chairs of the grooming of the CIA agents who sell us out, just like when President George H.W. Bush was no longer president. First thing he did, join the Carlyle Group. He went from a millionaire to a billionaire overnight. What did the Carlyle Group do? Well, they were the big money behind starting Kinetic.
Correct.
And 400 other industrial, weaponized, military-focused companies.
By the way, that was 2002, just for time frame.
We just have to stop the musical chairs and realize that the SES is the key. So when we tell you SES are the crown agents in America, they are the unlanded gentry, our American aristocracy that actually has control over the federal government, which then is like a monarchy, has control over all the states and also all international policies, and then they manipulate Washington, D.C. We just need to stop the SES connection to or anyone in intelligence, whether it be Lockheed Martin L3 or any other intelligence group, which would include Highlands Forum, the Office of Net Assessment, in QTEL, CIA's in QTEL or Leidos, any of those groups, they have to be ended because they are not American. They are transnational, they are international, and in most cases, they are controlled through the British.
I think it's really difficult for the average person who doesn't hear these names every day to believe it's this bad. But we can show press releases where Serco is bragging that they have the contract to manage the air traffic control in 76 different cities in the United States. They've just been given this deep space surveillance contract. They have hundreds of contracts with the U.S. Navy, various agencies of the executive branch, including the Office of Management and Budget, of the Office of Personnel Management, and Obamacare. They run the Obamacare website. So we have been infiltrated, and it's been at a technical level where once you're embedded in the infrastructure, you almost become invisible. If it wasn't for the public requirement to disclose these contracts, you would not know that that we have been overtaken. And what we got onto this contract because of Mike Pompeo. But one of the things that we discovered in looking at all this information about his life is that it had specific phases. He had his intelligence phase where he was stuck on the German border. And anybody that's been in Europe knows that was an intelligence operation and a tank division. And supposedly watching for communists sneaking across. And then he went directly into, he got a four-year degree in Harvard in law, where he was taken under the wing of one of the professors at Harvard. And during that time, he did these internships. And then one of the internships that he actually became an associate of Williams and Connolly. Now, that was a huge red flag because Williams and Connolly, at that time when he went to work with them, was representing Bill and Hillary Clinton in the Whitewater scandal. And Williams and Connolly was directly implicated in destroying evidence in that case. And that was also at the same time that Professor James P. Chandler, our eventual patent attorney, was writing the Economic Espionage Act, the Federal Trade Secrets Act, and the False Statements Accountability Act in 96. And so therefore, Mike would have been involved in that because Chandler then used Williams and Connolly to prosecute the first case of the Economic Espionage Act in 1998, I believe. It was U.S. versus HSU. And then we see this formation of his Thayer Aerospace Company at the same time as Richard Walker was filing all of his Internet of Things patents. And so we see all 97 looks to be a year when they really started getting on the move. And as we've talked about before, we think they had all the bases covered, and they were working with IBM, and IBM was going to provide all the technology, including DB2, which they also rebranded as Oracle. So they had some semblance of competition, and they were off to the races. They had Lotus involved. IBM had bought Lotus in about 94, 95. And then they ran into a buzzsaw problem because the IBM technology couldn't scale to the internet. And that was the specific problem, business problem, technical problem that we started working on in 97 and finally cracked the code on by 2000. And they were stuck. They were stuck with a system that could not scale to the idea they had. They wanted to surveil the whole planet, and they couldn't figure out how to do it with the data structures that IBM and Microsoft were using. And so this was at the same time Mike Pompeo is building that that scandalous jet fighter, parts for it. And then in his next phase of grooming was he became a congressman, a three-term congressman. And in all of that time, he did not, as far as we can tell, sit as a chairman of one subcommittee on any legislation that occurred during his time frame. He did make some noise that he was a member of the Tea Party and that he was a Sunday school teacher. But beyond these slightly conservative sounding attributes, his behavior was non-consequential during his congressional terms. And then magically he becomes director of the CIA and now a secretary of state. And what we now know from looking at the history of this group, that the first secretary of war to be involved in the Pilgrim Society was a man by the name of Elihu Root in 1899. He then later became secretary of state. And he was a co-founder of the Pilgrim Society, and we move on from there. So what we see in our history is the Pilgrim Society, with heavy funding from the Rothschilds, Rockefellers, J.P. Morgan, and Warburg, is they determined very early on to take control of our media, which they did. J.P. Morgan went out and bought the top 35 newspapers in the United States to control the editorial boards. And then they proceeded to place in our government our secretaries of state and our secretaries of war. And we can see that there probably has not been a time when the Pilgrims have not been in charge of those two positions. And with that becomes a lot of influence. And I think that that's the world we grew up in. It was a world where there was this concerted effort by the Pilgrim Society, the oligarchs of the world, and banking and medical and commerce, to seize permanent control. In order to do that and then pass that control on to your children and then your grandchildren requires a lot of control. And I think that's where we see the occultism and the sexual promiscuity as elements of control. And now they're, look at what's going on with the Hunter Biden story. So I think that we're seeing all these chickens come home to roost now.
Yeah, you know, when Pompeo came forward, I said, well, he's a do nothing. I don't even know who this guy is. He's a complete zero. Kind of like George H.W. Bush when he ran for the White House, they passed out a piece of blank paper that was folded in half, and you open it up and said, this is the resume of George H.W. Bush. And then on the backside, there was nothing in it. It was blank. On the backside, it says, if you know of anything he's ever done, please let us know. He was the head of the CIA. Hello. And so we're going to ignore that this is the grooming pathway for these globalists. I mean, look what George H.W. Bush did. Carlyle Group. Don't even get me started. I used to rail on that all the time. So we do have to remember that Pompeo's one claim to fame in politics was he helped Hillary get off of the Benghazi horrifying mess that she created. In other words, the murder of the ambassador. And then she ended up selling the Stinger weapons to Syria. And we know it because they were found there. And then we found out that she was actually paid in the exact amount and the check and the whole thing.
So here's the obvious question, now that we know he was on that committee and he used to work at Williams & Connolly. Well, Williams & Connolly was representing Hillary and in all of the Benghazi testimony. So why was he even on the committee? He should have recused himself.
Well, because as he said, he and after being the head of the CIA, he admitted that, with the smug look on his face and that happy, those fat cheeks, he was basically saying he loved the CIA. And what did he say he was? A liar, a cheater, a thief, a deceiver, a subversive terrorist who's anti-American. That's what they did. That was their job. And so who was it founded by? By the British. So what I notice is there's two kind of pathways going on here. There's a Silicon Valley cardboard cutout, cyber warlords, and they usually are absolute do-nothings. Look into their real past and you'll find it's completely made up. But then there's the path of those who are being groomed to be true New World Order, globalist, imperialist, controlled by the Brits. And that pathway is the exact one that Michael Pompeo has taken. And wherever he went, the red carpet was rolled out to him and he had nothing but one success after the next. I know someone named Betsy Ross who thinks that people are going to put Michael Pompeo up as a candidate to be president after Trump. I mean, this is how sick it is. When you look closely who he is, he's more British than he is American. And the reason I would say this is because just like Big Mike Obama, Michelle Obama was the handler for Barry Subarka, alias, aka Barack Hussein Obama. I want to for you to say a few words about Pompeo's wife, who basically took over the CIA when he became the head of that, and took over the State Department when he became the head of that. This woman probably doesn't even have a clearance. How does a person like that get given unprecedented control of two of the most powerful and subversive aspects of our federal government?
Yeah, that's actually one of the elements of the grooming, and that is often they replace their spouse with a replacement spouse. And we have on video him talking about the day he got married, because Good Morning America came in and did an interview magically with Mike. And he said, I'm going to go out this afternoon and get married. And that was in May of 1986. So he went out and got married to a girl by the name of Leslie Liebert. And they were married until 1997, when he clearly had this revelation for a life change. He dumped her, and he immediately started dating this Susan. She has a number of names. And as it turns out, they eventually got married in 1990, and this was her third marriage. She had a son by the second marriage named Nicholas. The odd thing is, he wasn't even 2 years in the post of CIA director, and yet there are complaints recorded in numerous places that personnel at the CIA and now at the State Department are complaining how activist she is as a first lady of the CIA and now first lady of the Secretary of State. And you're right. There needs to be more questions asked, because how could she become a first lady of the CIA unless she was sworn into all those secret programs? I mean, you were sworn into some of those, Douglas. How did you ever get in? Could your spouse, if you had a spouse at the time, even know what you were doing?
I would have compromised them. They could have gone to jail if I even told them what I was doing.
So something clear. She's clearly had clearance because she's been doing this over and over again. She obviously was comfortable being at the CIA and taking this active role, which she then repeated in as Secretary of State. So she's some sort of handler. That's pretty obvious. And that this marriage is childless as well. He had no children from his first marriage either. And now the interesting thing about this Nicholas Pompeo, who was a stepson, presumably. We haven't seen any adoption papers. But while our people were pulling together this information this week, he changed his LinkedIn to say that he had joined a WestCap Financial Group and looked into this WestCap Financial Group. It was started in 1997 by a person who is well known to be a CIA operative who worked for the Blackstone Group. And so we see him jumping ship right before the election and taking a vice president's position in this financial services company. So there we have the transition from father to son, from father to daughter, and now we're into the next generation that Mike Pompeo has set up for his children. Or for his child.
Well, that kind of answers my next question, which I think you had pointed this out before, but I didn't quite understand. When Hildebeest Clinton was the Secretary of State, she gave out $86 billion at her own discretion, because that's what you get to do when you're on the seventh floor of the State Department. And it goes out through USAID. It goes out through the verification for the loans for OPEC. It goes out through all kinds of philanthropic donations. It also goes out through UN allotments and payments that are made to the United Nations. And it goes to the State Department in many cases to give out weapons deals to the Department of Defense. So we're talking about huge amounts of money. And I had to ask, where would that money have gone? Because he's obviously crooked. It's the same old thing. He's a crown agent. And literally, there is such a group called crown agents, but he is a crown agent, a privy council crown agent.
their official thing, the Crown Agents of the United States. And they actually list their contracts with the GSA on the GSA schedule. So you're not making any of that up. That's easy to prove.
I call him the Queen's tax collector. The Queen gets taxes on Lockheed Martin, on the military industrial complex, on Serco, on every service imaginable. Literally, I think you once said that American military can't send a message to one of our ships at sea without one of these British agencies giving right. the permission. It has to go over their lines, their wires, their control. So in other words, they hear everything we do. There is a tax. We thought we won the American Revolution, and we were fighting against no taxation without representation. But now the tax is there. It's overt. It's conducted by and always assured by senior executive service members who rotate in and out of the intelligence groups. And basically, as far as I can see, Michael Pompeo is just a tax collector for the Queen. And in my opinion, he looks so pompous. He looks so bloated. He looks so blown up. And he never says anything of substance ever. Never heard an intelligent sentence out of his mouth. I would like to take a hat pin and just burst him, because I think he's just a British bubble.